It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 256 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's time for another doubleheader as I talk first with Braden Cox about Pet Squadron, his Kickstarter project that's going on right now and is a great book that deserves your support. Go to Kickstarter.com and look up Pet Squadron. We talk about how the book came to be, about our affection for animals and how they inspired the characters in this comic, as well as what the future might hold for the series. Then I bring back a classic interview with Peter Hogan, the writer behind Resident Alien, and there's a current miniseries going on for that right now called The Man with No Name, and I highly recommend that. The interview took place a couple of years ago, and I edited out some of the time-sensitive stuff, so you get the main important things about the comic. There's still a couple of things he's talking about that will be time-sensitive, but if you want to follow up and find out how these projects turned out, feel free to do so. We discuss how the title came to be, as well as the main character, a purple-headed, pointy-eared, black-eyed alien who passes for a doctor in rural America. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say about making this comic happen. There's a lot to get to this episode, so let's get to it. It's always great to talk to Braden Cox, creator of such good things as Reclaiming Godhood, and who has a great Kickstarter going on right now for Pet Squadron Defenders of Humanity, a topic that I really enjoy. How are you doing today, Braden?
Doing pretty good. It's good to be back, always on the comic podcast.
Always good to talk with you. Now, why don't we jump right into Pet Squadron, because you're in the middle of a Kickstarter, as we said, and we need to get the word out about this good thing so that this can be funded and good things can happen. Why don't you talk about what Pet Squadron is about?
So, Pet Squadron takes place in a modern world where a new magic has been created from the bond of man and beast, so to say. And this magic is known as the Feral Force. And what the Feral Force does is it allows pets to take on different forms to defend humanity with. Mm-hmm. And they defend humanity from, you know, these creatures that come from the other world. And what's the other world? Well, it's a different dimension where a bunch of these mythological beings live. Mm-hmm. And they tear portals into our world and kidnap humans. Why? We don't know.
Not yet. We probably don't, but we may find out, hopefully, if we get enough issues to do that, sounds like.
Yeah.
Why don't I go ahead, because you write some wonderful stuff about the squadron as well as the individual characters. So I want to read this one from the Kickstarter page. It says, a story of how pets and humans live in harmony, except for when giant monsters or goblins rip into our world. Who will help us? Who can stop these horrendous creatures? Well, the first respondents may be a lot closer to home than you would think. Join the Section W Pet Squadron on their epic adventures towards protecting, redemption, and treats. And I have two doggies who love treats, so even saying the word, I have to say it a little lower because if they hear it, they'll come running. So that's pretty good stuff. I like the way that's written out. Now, when did the concept come up for Pet Squadron? When did you start to develop it?
So the original Titan concept I came up with a while ago when I was kind of trying to come up with new character ideas for Reclaiming Godhood. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that the character wouldn't really fit in the story. And then I kind of put it on hold. And then I dug through my sarcophagus of old drawings. And then I found that picture and I was like, you know, I could do something with this. And so I kind of pitched the idea to my artist, the artist that's doing the book, Nicholas Torres, and he said he really liked it, and he modernized and, you know, revamped everything for it.
Very cool. And how long ago was that when it started to percolate?
About a year and a half ago.
Okay, that's good. Now, you already knew Nicholas, right?
Yeah, he I actually did some art for the Reclaiming Godhood Kickstarter.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's good stuff. Now, talk about the individual characters. One thing I really like, I saw some of the artwork on the Kickstarter page as well as on Facebook, and it's really nicely done. I really love the way that it looks. Talk about the way that the different characters come. And, of course, you sort of alluded to one of them, and that is Titan, who is the pug. Now, if I remember correctly, you own a pug, right?
Yeah, and his name is Titan.
Okay, so he doesn't carry a sword that has a bone in the handle, does he, by any chance like that?
Well, he's retired now, but...
Oh, okay. Let me read the description as it says it on the Kickstarter page. It says, Titan is awesome. He's the leader of the group. With his golden armor and his sense of justice, no threat can face the squad. His huge sword also helps. Fortunately, we mentioned the sword. Does he actually physically look like Titan the way that he does, that character does in the comic?
He looks pretty close to Titan, yeah.
Okay, very good. How old is your Titan, by the way?
Titan, holy cow, he'll be 7 this year.
Oh boy, so he's getting he's a mature little guy.
Yeah, like I said, he's in retirement.
Okay, so that's kind of cute. So my understanding is that a lot of these characters came from animals that you or the other creators or other people that you know are familiar with.
Yeah, a lot of the animals is to pay tribute to some of our comrades that we've lost within the years.
Mm-hmm. So I love Titan is such a great thing. I wonder, it'd be cool if Titan, the real dog, could actually understand what was going on. He's been immortalized as a comic character. That'd be kind of fun. Okay, let's move on to the other characters. You've got Mr. Snuggles is a cat. And I'm going to read the little thing, of course. It says, don't be fooled by his cute, cuddly name. Snuggles is one tough ninja. He uses laser claws to rip enemies apart. He's got this purple mask on with like a paw print on it. So, Mr. Snuggles, what's the story with him? He's a ninja, apparently, so he's a little different. Titan is more muscle thing, and this guy is much more, what do you want to say, a little more adept, a little as far as like
more physical. More of like an assassin, you know, kind of like a ninja.
Okay, so he's an assassin.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the difference between him? Is he also, like, Titan is owned by somebody in the book? Is that what's going on? He's got an owner?
Yeah, Titan is owned. Mm-hmm. And just so you guys know, the owner and Titan kind of have a cameo in Reclaiming Godhood, the first issue.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. What about Mr. Snuggles?
So Mr. Snuggles is he's going to be kind of more of a deep kind of character. He pretty much left home. And he can't go home, you know, until he finds a way to stop these portals from coming into the dimension, because the creatures always seem to find him at his home and put his family in danger.
Oh.
So he disappeared from his family for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Snuggles is actually, he's paying tribute to my wife's cat who disappeared a couple of years ago.
Oh,
so,
well, maybe he's off fighting, as a ninja, fighting pairs. That'd be funny. It's a cute thing, because cats do that, you know. Cats let you know who's in charge, and that's not you, which I always get a kick out of, because dogs are very, you know, adoring and loving, and cats are much more, when are you going to do stuff for me kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting that he's a ninja, and that kind of separateness from society is probably fits a cat real well, I think.
Yep.
That's good. Okay. And the next one we come to is a lizard who's a wizard, which I find that really entertaining. It goes by the name of Stripe, and I'll quick read this description. Stripe is the group's cold-blooded wizard. He channels his magic through the light bulb in his tank. He's the wisest member of the team, which I find interesting. A lizard being really wise is really something interesting to me. How come that he's the wisest one of the group? How did that happen?
So he is the wisest, mainly, you know, because of his archetype. He's a wizard. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to give too much away, because his story will be in the Pet Squadron Orton's book we plan on releasing.
Okay.
Which will tell everything about why he's like that.
Mm-hmm. So why is he called Stripe? That's kind of an interesting name for him.
So Stripe is another one of those tribute animals.
Mm-hmm.
And he pays tribute to my best friend in middle school. He had a pet iguana named Stripe.
Mm-hmm.
And he had like this really weird odd stripe down his back. Mm-hmm. And it was really unique.
Mm, very cool. Now, there's another drawing of him on the page, and he's very unconcerned. You know, he's kind of like, oh, well. But there's also another drawing where he kind of is angry. and stuff. So he probably is the guy who's going to, you talk about cold-blooded, he probably is less concerned about danger than others are. And probably his wizard powers really help with that too. So that's kind of interesting. It's a great character. I'm going to be fascinated to see how you do that, because wizards are, especially with Harry Potter and, you know, the fantastical beasts and stuff coming out, this is a good time for a wizard to show up.
Yeah.
Now, you've got another character. Looks like it's a parrot or something. It's Holly, and it says, Holly is a punk rocker. If grenades, missiles, and heavy artillery are not enough to defend humans, her attitude will do the rest. Is she a parrot? What kind of a creature is she?
So, Holly is a cockatoo.
Oh, okay.
You know, the crazy white birds with the cool-looking mohawks?
Yeah. Yeah, she's kind of good. Do you see her wings? And you see that she's got her arms folded on the front. And I kind of find that she's got this, you're right about the attitude. It's a great picture of her. And the way that she kind of looks, as cold as Stripe is, she looks more, what do you want to say, aggressive or angry kind of than, say, Stripe does? Is that what Holly?
Yeah, she's more of a rebellious kind of character. Mm-hmm. But she'll do stuff and not listen to, you know, the leaders. But she would never do anything to put her squad into danger.
Hmm. Now, she's much more of a heavy artillery type of person. She uses implements.
Yeah, she uses a lot of different... She has, like, grenades. And her cannon is actually in the shape of her birdcage.
Hmm.
So she kind of has, like, a rocket launcher, and she can transform it into other kinds of guns.
Wow. Okay. Wow, that's something. Where does she get all this stuff? Or is that something you're going to reveal in the book?
So, it's something I can tell, but all of the weapons, all of the gear of the Pet Squadron is based off of a pet's most cherished item from their family.
Oh, okay. Okay, very cool.
Titan is commonly known as a tag wielder because their greatest thing that, you know, that has ever been given to them is a home. So, you know, like the tag is, you know, their greatest gift because they were given a home and a family.
Okay, very smooth.
And so... Yeah, and like others, like Holly, hers is her birdcage. And Stripes is actually the log in his reptilian cage. And the orb that powers it is actually the heat lamp bulb from it.
Oh, cool. Very, very cool. That's neat. Now we got two more members. And I'm noticing, interestingly enough, that you've got a 50-50 development. Half of them are male and half of them are female. Was that a conscious decision on your part? Or did that just kind of fall out the way that the characters developed? How did that happen?
It was kind of a conscious decision. Like, it started off with just five. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I should make things a little more even. Because everyone always does, you know, the three guys, two girls kind of thing.
Right. So that's a good idea, though, to kind of have diversity in the sense of equal numbers in the group. You don't see that much in comics, as you're right when you say that. So we got two more. Let's talk about Lord Fishy. And it says on here, despite her title, Lord Fishy is a girl. She's the strongest fish in the sea and the most fierce warrior on land. So that's pretty cool. She's got a helmet on her head?
Yeah, it's a fishbowl helmet.
Okay.
So she can breathe while she's on land.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. What's Lord Fishy's abilities and powers? She's hand-to-hand combat?
So she actually wields a fishbowl mace. Mm. She has like a giant two-handed fishbowl mace. Mm-hmm. She's the strongest... You know, she's like the Hulk of the group. Mm-hmm. She's the strongest. She's the toughest. And she's also very protective. She has kind of the heart of gold.
Oh, wow. Pretty cool. What kind of fish is she? Do we know that?
Her design is based off of an Oscar, which are, you know, one of the most intelligent fishes.
Right.
They're kind of like the dogs of the fish universe.
Very cool. Very cool. Looks a great character. I love the way that she's rendered. It really looks good. And one last one, and that's Scythe. Looks like a praying mantis to me. Is she a praying mantis?
Yep.
She is. Okay, let me read
she is.
Oh, very cool. Let's read the description. Scythe is graceful, swift, and deadly. Humans can sleep easy knowing a tiny green samurai guards their back. And she's got little swords it almost looks like the legs of a praying mantis that they've got on there. How'd she get those?
So her weapons are kind of like her armor is based off of her cage that she sleeps in, and her blades are based off of a praying mantis kind of have like the forward arm kind of blades with the spikes on them.
Mm-hmm.
So we just went and kind of turned them into like scythes.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Now, of course, you got all six and the pages. I really do say that I like it. There's a little bit of a cartoon or an anime feel to it. And I like this mixture when you put something that's a little out of the realistic range. It makes really anything possible as far as what's going to happen in the book. Did you and Nicholas sit down and come up with that concept? Is that the way you wanted to do it?
Nicholas, that's just kind of his art style. Okay. And yeah, I really liked his art style. And I was like, we should get together and do this. And he, like I said, he really liked the idea. And so we're kind of doing it in his art style. Like, we've been talking about, like, you know, keeping the art style like that for the squad. And like, when like the giant monsters tear through the dimension, we've talked about changing, like, you know, kind of the art style of those like monsters to show that they're from a different dimension.
Very cool.
And we that's something we've been discussing. We're not quite sure if we're going to do it.
All right, so it looks really good. The pages I've seen so far are really dynamic, and there's lots of good action going on and good fighting and stuff. Of course, you know, you've pretty much got characters that are going to be help when it comes to conflict, you know, physical conflict, which is a good idea. Of course, that makes sense when you've got monsters and goblins and other things coming into the world. You need somebody who can protect humanity. And that's going to require physical ability, seems like. So they're well put together, I think.
Yeah, they're, like I said, we're trying to make it a lot of fun for everyone. And they definitely will cause any kind of physical conflict.
Okay, very good. So let's talk about, you've got the Kickstarter going. And let's see, the Kickstarter concludes on Thursday, December 1 at 9:02 p.m. Eastern Time. And you're looking to get $4,000, and we got a little work to do to get it all done. So we want to get, I want to get the word out. If you go to Kickstarter and look up Pet Squadron, you'll find it right there. And it's a great, great thing. And you've got a nice little video that you've put together. And 26 backers as of when we're talking. And we need to get things out because I really want to see this. And I know that if you don't get the funding through this, it might delay putting this comic out. So I highly encourage people to get out there and support this good thing. So that's working on. Now, of course, you, as we talked about earlier, you have your other books going on. How is your other book coming these days? Because we've seen, what, two? The first one was black and white, and the second one was color. And Reclaiming Godhood's about Jupiter. Do you want to, in case somebody didn't get to hear your previous interview on this podcast, what is Reclaiming Godhood about?
So Reclaiming Godhood is about the Roman pantheon god Jupiter, and he gets betrayed by his brother Pluto and stripped of his godhood and casted to Earth.
Now, you've got the first two books are out. What's the story as far as how you are you working on issue three right now?
Yeah, issue three is actually almost done, and I'm going to be putting the final edits on it.
Very good. Now, my understanding is because it was the first issue was black and white, you're going to re-release that with color? Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, we are relaunching it in color just due to the fact that we're publishing it ourselves now.
Okay.
So there will be a new cover, new color,
cool.
All the good new stuff for a relaunch.
That'll be great. Now, it sounds like you're publishing. You have a new company that you're doing this with?
It's just my Bradoxine Studios. We'll be self-publishing under that right now.
Okay. Can you spell that? Because I'm just not certain everybody will know how to spell that. Find that out. Because it's on Facebook, right? It was where all this information is. So how do you spell the Bradoxin?
So it's Bradoxin. And then just Studios.
Okay. So that's a way to find it. And if you go to Facebook, you'll find that. And what other projects are you working on as far as... I imagine Pet Squadron and Reclaiming Godhood keep you busy. Any other things that you're working on that we should know about?
So we have two more books we plan on releasing. And it's one is called Ignited, like I-G-K-N-I-G-H-T-E-D.
Ah, okay.
And it takes place in the same realm as Reclaiming Godhood.
Okay.
And it's about the four elemental lords that waged world against the mortal world. And they became such a threat that the gods had intervened. And Jupiter is one of them. He intervened and stopped the elemental lords and stripped them of their essences and combined them with the four souls of the suffering. And so now their essences are doomed to live this world in a mortal life always.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, my understanding is there's going to be action in this too, as well as kind of examining their life as inhumanity.
Yeah, so there will be lots of action. And so far, like the first issue talks about a girl named Elena, and she's actually the reincarnation of the Fire Lord, And she stumbles onto this old temple that has all of the Fire Lord soldiers in there. Mm-hmm. And she goes in there and her memories re-spark and she remembers who she was. Oh. And she accidentally awakens one of the knights. Mm-hmm. Good. And so she's always going to be in an internal battle with herself, knowing all of the horrible things that she did in the past.
Hmm. That's interesting to have a female be that way, because usually a male character would have that kind of stuff going on. So that's a good choice. I like it when we do these things in different ways. So I like the fact that you're doing that and making a woman basically be the one going through this.
Yeah, like we thought about it and we thought it'd make the comic a lot, you know, better. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how's that coming along? Do you have any release date in mind for that one?
Not quite yet. It's going to be a pretty big book, though. It'll be about 32 pages.
Oh, wow.
And we have the prologue done. Mm-hmm. And if you check us out on Facebook, mm-hmm. you can just type in the Ignited the way I spelt it earlier, mm-hmm. and they'll find it. And it has a couple of pages on there along with the cover art.
Cool, cool. Other projects you're working on, or is that all keeping you pretty busy?
One more. The last one that I have is Blade of the Undying.
Okay.
And it's kind of, you know, a medieval European-y styled fantasy.
Okay.
Takes place in the Dark Ages. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, knights and everything. And it's about these five necromancer lords. Mm-hmm. You have the Lord of Bone, mm-hmm. the Lord of Flesh, mm-hmm. the Lord of Soul, mm-hmm. the Lord of Blood, and the Lord of Plague.
Okay.
And they're all trying to go on a global domination takeover.
Okay.
And one of the most unlikely heroes rises up, which is a skeletal warrior who breaks control from the necromancers, mm-hmm. and then he goes on a quest to slay them.
Oh, okay. Sounds interesting. That'd be a good thing. I like books that are set in different time periods, too. Now, the only thing I would ask of you is don't make it too politically correct, because I've seen sometimes they go back in the past and they change it to be more towards our sensibilities. I always like it when they're not, that we actually see things the way they most likely really did it.
Oh, don't worry. Blade of the Undying will not change any of that. They will see how bad it actually was back in the medieval times.
Oh, cool. See, that's important to me. We learn stuff about how they actually lived at that point, rather than trying to impose our own values on that time period, which always bothers me when that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. So that's all you got on your plate right now? Because that's probably enough to keep you
going. Yeah, right now, that's about it. There will be future projects, but those are the main four right now.
Okay, very good. Again, it's Pet Squadron Defenders of Humanity. It's out on Kickstarter.com. Look it up, and we've only got until December the 1st, a Thursday. So please get out there and support this project, because I really love to see it come to fruition. And as far as like issue one, do you have an idea as to when that's going to come?
So if we get funded, mm-hmm. I plan to have it out as soon as possible. But if we do not get funded, mm-hmm. it'll probably take a lot longer.
Okay.
Probably a year and a year and a half compared to the six-month period we could probably have it out and shipped out.
Okay. Well, I'd prefer to see it sooner rather than later. So, again, I encourage people to get there and support this Kickstarter, because it's really – it looks like wonderful stuff. The art just fits it perfectly, and it's a great story. Anything to do with pets and stuff like that I really love. So I think it's –
yeah, you know, it's a really good book for people to come out. You know, it pays tribute to our pets. Mm-hmm. It'll be a fun book to read with your kids. Mm-hmm. You know, get them into the spirit of what do our pets do when we're at school, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to think that anybody who has a pet or is somewhat, you know, knows a pet, that like you're talking about here, like a dog or a cat or something, they're going to relate to these characters and be able to really get into them and want to see what's going on with them and you know, what happens to them. So I think you've come up with a really good winner here, and I'd like to see it really come to fruition and get going, because, again, the screams animated series to me, it just really does. I think cartoon is something, this would work perfectly on Cartoon Network or something like that.
Yeah, I've been told that. You're not the first that's actually told me that. I've been told by multiple people that if I can, that I should go and pitch the series to, you know, Netflix or Cartoon Network and the other places.
Not like you don't have enough to do already, but somewhere down the road, if the opportunity presents itself, I would encourage you, because I think it's just a cool concept. And the art and stuff just screams, you know, you're right, Netflix would be a perfect place, or Cartoon Network would be fun. Any of those places I think would be great for this, as well as a good comic.
Yeah, it'll be really good either way.
Well, you're doing great stuff, Braden, and you know, continue to do that, and hope to look forward to talking with you very soon again about all these things. When Pet Squadron's about to come out, you'll have to send me a copy so I can write a review, because I like what I see so far and would really love to help people discover this comic.
Yeah, we most certainly will. And remember, the Kickstarter only has a 5-page preview. If you want the full 8 pages, you'll have to find us on Facebook.
Right. That sounds good. Well, I encourage people, this is a great book. Get out there and support it, because we need this kind of variety in comics, in my opinion. So keep it up, Braden. Wonderful stuff.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. Thanks for having me. Like I said, always a pleasure coming back on and talking to everyone.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol...
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Welcome to the podcast, Peter Hogan, one of the creators behind one of my favorite books that's out right now called Resident Alien. And you've done other works too on like 2000 AD and other things for DC's Vertigo as well. How are you doing today, Peter?
I'm doing fine, yeah.
It's good to talk with you. Why don't we go ahead and start off with Resident Alien, because that's the book I'm dying to get to.
Okay.
I always noticed that when you folks over in the UK get involved with things and name things, you have a lot more precise way of dealing with words than we do over in the States. We want to come up with whole new words. You guys look at different shades of meanings much more than we do. So when I saw this book was called Resident Alien, when I picked it up and started to read it, I was surprised by the content. It wasn't what I was expecting. Why don't you first tell us, you may not have read it, what Resident Alien's all about?
Okay, well, the clue is kind of in the title. It's about an alien who's been living on Earth for a few years. His ship crash-landed, as far as we know, and he's stuck here. So although we portray him right throughout the book as an alien, it's very evident that the people around him don't see him that way. He must appear normal to them. Maybe he's affecting their perception somehow. Even so, he was living the life of a recluse, hoping not to attract too much attention, and then in the first series, events conspire to sort of draw him out. He's been kind of, his cover identity is that of a doctor, and he ends up becoming the doctor in a small town called Patience, and where there happen to be some murders going on, and that kind of intrigues him, and he gets drawn into playing amateur detective. And it's one of those things that it's a bit like Sherlock Holmes in that, you know, he's bored. So something that will stimulate him and interest him is something that he gets instantly addicted to. He's waiting in the hope that one day he's going to be rescued by his people. But, you know, it could be a long wait. So he's got to find something to do to occupy his time. Mm-hmm. And this solving crimes thing seems to be it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really kind of interesting to me because when he arrives on Earth, as I understand it, he didn't really understand much about humanity. It wasn't that like he was like looking at the planet. He just happened to crash here.
Well, as we'll find out in future series, he did come here for a purpose, but you're right. He doesn't know that much about humanity, so he very much has to kind of, you know, educate himself on the hoof as to what people are all about. And, you know, again, he gets drawn in. He gets curious. The whole topic of murder and crime fascinates him, and he's been reading books and watching movies for years about those subjects. So to actually sort of deal with real murder is something he finds very exciting.
Now, one of the things I love about the book so much, and I am a huge proponent of variety, is that this is much more like Concrete in the feel of it. Have you ever read Paul Chadwick's Concrete?
Yeah.
This has got very much of that feeling of drama as opposed to action. And I love that because it's so nice to see somebody who sometimes dialogue bogs down a comic book, but with your dialogue, it propels the story forward. And I kind of think that's a great change of pace for what I'm used to reading. And I love my Long John's books, but I've got to tell you, it's nice to read something that's different. And you and the artist do a great job of propelling things along. And it's not dull to me. And I just think that is such a great thing, such a nice change of pace for a comic book.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. I've got a fondness for superheroes too, but I loved Concrete and Tintin and Love and Rockets. There's all kinds of things that comics can be that aren't necessarily dependent upon action. Like you say, drama. Drama is much more of a part of most people's lives than action. Action is the thing you don't want. You know, action is somebody mugging you or robbing your house or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that he is drawn into all this stuff just by the fact that he doesn't want to do it. Everybody kind of comes to him and says, look, you're not doing anything. Help us do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And as he gets pulled into it, the more he comes to understand what's all involved with forensics, and which also he's learning about humanity as he's doing this kind of stuff. And I actually think this is a great thing for him to be able to study humanity up close and personal like
that. Yeah, no, very much so. I mean, you know, he is kind of a doctor on his own world. He's a biologist, so he's used to studying, you know, alien species, but I don't think he's ever encountered anything quite like Earth people before.
Well, we haven't encountered anything like Earth people before either.
Not quite. Yeah. That's one of the things I think people can relate to about it, is the fact that you've got this guy who is visibly an alien, and yet he's kind of the most human person in the book.
See, I wanted to touch on that, because that actually is something I find really interesting. When I've seen the book described and I've read you talking about it, it's usually coming across with the thing that he's got an extra ability to be sympathetic, you know, empathy and things like that. And I always kind of wonder if it's kind of a commentary on humans that we're not nearly as empathetic as he is. I always thought that because he's so sympathetic, he's interested in what other people are thinking and doing. He very much is... I wish we were more like him on some level.
Yeah.
That's the thing that really drives me crazy about him, because a lot of the humans are kind of like thick compared to him when he's dealing with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think tragically a lot of people are. But I think one of the things that we put in the story is that he's not exactly telepathic, but he's very, very observant. So he's picking up on a lot of things like body language and just micro movements. He knows when people are lying, that kind of thing. But A, he has empathy, and B, he has kind of like a willingness to have empathy. He wants to understand.
Mm-hmm. So you think that's what separates him from the humans in the book?
Yeah, well, I think there are plenty of nice people in this world, but I think the vast majority of people just kind of like want to get on with their own lives. They don't actually think too much about other people. They're just kind of obsessed with themselves.
So on some levels, he's like a commentary on what humanity could be.
Yeah, which is the thing of, you know, he's an outsider, so that's kind of the role that he's playing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was reading one of the things when you all wanted to start making this comic was that the artist wanted to draw an alien.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, Steve and I had worked together before. We did stuff for Vertigo for The Dreaming, which was the Sandman spin-off title. And we got on really well, and I love Steve's work. I've loved it ever since seeing the Bo Jeffrey saga way back when in Warrior. So like I said, I wanted to work with Steve again, so we were talking. I said, well, what do you want to do? And he said he wanted to do something involving aliens, because that whole area kind of intrigued him. Mm-hmm. So I went off and thought about it, and this is what I came up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a huge kick, because when I think of the term resident alien, I think of something else. I think of, especially in America, everybody's debating about securing the borders and illegal immigrants and all this kind of stuff. And so I thought, is this like going to be like a Hispanic guy or something? I couldn't figure what it was. So when I actually saw it was an alien, I was very happily surprised. I said, oh, this is going to be really interesting. And it is very thoughtful. It's one of the words I used to describe this book. It doesn't take things too simply, you know, which many superhero comics, everything is like straightforward. There's no hidden things. On this one, there's lots of different levels going on. You know, some of the humans are more perceptive than others. Like his nurse has actually looked at him and begun to see through his disguise, or however he's able to go that. But in the latest series, there's some big development. I want to get to that because that's a huge thing. You guys have been doing these in the terms of miniseries rather than having an ongoing comic. And, you know, I have to say that quality is worth waiting for. And that, for me, this is the great thing. I'd rather have a miniseries that's done well and have it come out occasionally than to have a monthly comic that the quality drops. And so I think you guys are doing a great job. It's smart to do miniseries like this so you guys can put things together at your pace. And when it's ready, we'll be here waiting for it. So I think that's great.
Yeah, well, Steve isn't the fastest artist in the world, but it was always, right from the beginning, we're both very happy with Dark Horse, and Dark Horse loved this the minute they saw it. And so the plan was always kind of like a long-term thing, but to do it, as you say, as a series of mini-series, rather than try and keep to some schedule that we probably wouldn't have been able to keep to. So, you know, as I speak, Steve is drawing the third series, and I'm writing the fourth one.
Wow. Well, that's good to hear, because I can't wait to see more of this stuff. It's a great, great book. It's so much fun and adds that variety that I need to my reading. Now, the thing that interests me is that this thing started out as part of Dark Horse Presents, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I pitched it to Dark Horse just as they were planning to relaunch Dark Horse Presents. Mm-hmm. And so Mike Richardson saw it and basically wanted to run it quite soon on in that series. I can't remember what issue we kicked off in, but it was quite early on.
Mm-hmm. And then they collected those into issue number zero.
Yeah.
The first miniseries was called what?
First one's called Welcome to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is The Suicide Blonde.
Yeah. That one I really, really liked. And I have to say, some comics keep me awake at night, and this is one of them. I was sitting there thinking, other people can't see him. Is that sort of a thing between him and humanity? What would happen if somebody actually like turned a video camera on him? Would they see him? And we learned that answer in The Suicide Blonde.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating to me is that basically, and I don't want to spoil too much for it, because you've got the mystery going on, so this is kind of an undergoing, a second storyline. And let's just say that technology, he doesn't seem to be able to protect himself from the way he can with human perception.
Well, he can in terms of, you know, if he knows that there are like video cameras, CCTV cameras, whatever, he can jam them. But, you know, somebody just accidentally turning around and taking a photograph and he's not aware of it, they've got him.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, see, I don't want to spoil too much, but at the end we find out that not only is this photographer involved in this stuff, we come to discover that it looks like the men in black from the government are also involved. And this whole thing's going to come crashing down on him in the future. And I just, you know, I'm dying to see what happens. How is he going to deal with all this? So I just think that the way that that ended just whetted my appetite for more. I just thought that was so well written. You know, not only do we find out what the murder mystery resolution was, but we also get pulled into the next mini series. So I love the way that ended. It was such a terrific ending. This book is just one of those books that just pulls me along. I got to turn the page quick to find out what's going on next. And I love that in a book. I just think that is such a great comic.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
Now, the third miniseries.
Yeah.
Do you have a title for that miniseries yet?
Yeah, we do. It's called The Samhain Mystery. And we kind of tease that a bit in the second storyline as to, you know, who and what Samhain is. And so you'll be finding out more about that in the third one.
Okay. Don't spoil anything because
I won't.
Because I always ask people, don't get in trouble on my account. I don't mind a tease. I don't want to spoil. That's the thing I don't really want. Even though the website I work for is called Major Spoilers, I would much rather buy the book and read the thing myself and enjoy it so much. I also wanted to tell you, too, is that a lot of times I get recommended books, and this is one of those books that a certain store that I go to in the Washington, D.C. area, the people like to recommend books, and this is one of the ones that they recommended was Resident Alien, because as I said, I had this total misperception as to what it was about, and these people kept telling me what a great book it was, and I said, well, okay, I'll buy the Zero issue and I'll see what's going on.
Well, you know, I hear that a lot, you know, from the people in stores are being really kind of supportive and recommending it to people, which is great to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope they keep doing it, because that's the way I found out about it, was to hear that. Because unfortunately, being an American, my perception of what that phrase meant was totally different from what it was.
Well, you know, I knew an English guy who was living in New York, and I kind of wondered how he was managing to stay there, and did he have a green card or what? And anyway, he told me that he had this resident alien card. And this was years and years ago, and I just thought it was really funny, because I immediately pictured an alien living in the world. And it took me years and years to come up with the story to go with the title, but there you go.
Well, see, that's a good thing, because, you know, this is why I think different writers can approach things differently, and I love the unique takes on things. I was talking to one of your fellow countrymen, Sai Datan, who was telling me he was watching a show about slaughtering pigs. And he came away with this whole idea for a comic book series called, I think, Slaughterman's Creed, it's called.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, if I watched a show about slaughtering pigs, I don't know if I'd come up with a comic book series doing that. You know?
Yeah, well, you never know where things will come from, you know.
Yeah, so. Isn't that funny? That's kind of cool, because it's a very profound book. It's just something I highly recommend to everybody. If you are a little tired of superheroes and you want to try something that's a little more thoughtful and a little more dramatic in that sense, and I always say get Resident Alien. I love the way that Harry looks, the alien. Now, he's got this purple head with black eyes and pointed ears, and, you know, if I saw someone like that, you know, it would creep me out. But the thing that always interests me is we don't know what he's making himself look like, really, a lot of the time.
No.
It's just that we see this alien coming up and holding people's hands and stuff like that as a doctor. And I'm sitting there going, like, I'm going to look at my doctor a little differently moving forward.
Well, I think it's very powerful. We kind of made a conscious decision to show him throughout as an alien. And we did think, you know, well, maybe we could show him as other people see him. And, you know, but maybe they all see him differently. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very powerful kind of thing. Because even when there's nothing happening, there's an alien on the page.
Yeah. And sometimes that creeps me out, I have to tell you.
Oh, he's a nice guy.
Well, he is, but a purple guy with pointed ears and black eyes, I'd have a time getting used to that, to be frank. But he's such a nice guy about the whole business, and he's very compassionate. He's very intelligent and all this kind of stuff. So I always am intrigued when aliens are actually smarter and better than we are at being human. So I always like that's a very Star Trek way of doing things.
Well, you know, I think there'd been this like long, long history of showing aliens as the bad guys, you know, in movies and TV shows and all the rest of it. They're always trying to invade us or abduct us or do something terrible to us. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, it's a long time since we've seen an alien as a good guy, so let's give that a try. And it seemed to sort of touch a nerve or something. People really responded to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did. I mean, when I looked at them and I started to see, and, you know, of course, comics are a good way to do this. I have to say, though, this screams television show to me. You know, this would be kind of a neat thing if it was actually became a TV series or a
TV
program.
Well, it's been under discussion for a long time. I mean, that's all I can tell you at this moment. Yeah. But yes, people are certainly thinking about it.
Well, I certainly would like to see this on television. And, of course, your fun would be you'd need, like, somebody being able to do the alien makeup all the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I always think with things like that, you know, if unless CGI is done really well, you'd probably be better off doing it with makeup. But that would mean somebody would have to spend 5 hours in a makeup chair every day.
Yeah,
but there you go. It might be worth it.
Always reminds me of, like, Space Precinct, which was a show, and I'm blanking on the name of the gentleman who did that. He also did, like, Fireball XL5. Jerry Anderson.
Jerry Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, because he had the people didn't like the makeup, and I was like, you know, that doesn't bother me at all. The story's so good, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
A lot of people just didn't seem to like it. Now, what about his nurse? It seems to me like his relationship with the nurse is deepening, and she's the one that kind of was able to begin to perceive that he wasn't exactly the way that he looks.
Yeah.
Is that relationship going to
develop? Yeah, that's going to develop. Well, the exact nature of their relationship, I think, is going to puzzle them for quite a while. And it's not going to develop quickly, but they're in it together for the long haul.
Okay. Now, one of the things I also enjoyed was the timing of the introduction of the Men in Black, because over here in the United States, you know, the NSA and snooping on us and all that stuff's going on. And I thought, man, this book could not be out at a better time, because they're looking and they see all this stuff over the internet and what's going on when the image goes out.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, I said, this, you couldn't have timed that any better. You could have put it out with
well, that was lucky coincidence, but there you go.
Now, do these get collected in the trades? Is that how?
Yeah, they do. The first one's already out. That's called Welcome to Earth. And then the Suicide Blonde was already out.
Okay. Now, do you guys finish everything before? Do you finish all the chapters before you go to press? Or do you get started once you've got a couple of the chapters in and then do it?
No, I think they pretty much finish it. I mean, I think Steve might be finishing off the last issue when, you know, the first one comes out. But it's a fair ways along.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got a lot of experience working in, like, 2000 AD and other things like that. What other projects are you working on that we should be aware of?
Right now? Not that much that I can tell you about. I've got the Tom Strong series coming out still from Vertigo, mm-hmm. and the last issue of that will be out, I think, on New Year's Eve. And the last issue, I'm really pleased with it. Kind of, you know, it makes sense of the rest of the series, if you know what I mean. It ties everything together. So hopefully there'll be more Tom Strong, but I haven't heard about that yet. We're also in January. We've got a trade coming out of Terra Obscura, which is the series that I co-plotted with Alan Moore. And Yannick Paquette did the art for. And we did two series of that, and they're being collected in this trade. And other than that, there's about three or four things that are in various stages of development, which, like I say, I can't really tell you about.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing, because then they're likely to happen. Whenever people can't talk about it, that means that these good things are likely on the way, and so I'm real happy about that. I got to ask you, since you brought it up, what was it like to work with Alan Moore, because that man's like decades ahead of the rest of us.
Yeah.
Thinking these things out.
Well, it was a wonderful experience. I mean, the thing is, I've known Alan for, over 20 years, long over 20 years. Before I got into writing comics, I was a journalist, and I interviewed Alan a couple of times. And we sort of hit it off. And so when I did start writing comics, I'd send the ones that I was really proud of for him to have a look at. And as a result of that, he ended up hiring me to write for the ABC line when he was doing that. So I did a couple of issues of Tom Strong. I did a Tesla Strong special.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did the Terra Obscura stuff, which was the Nador superheroes, the Fighting Yank and the Black Terror and all of those guys, mm-hmm. which were out of copyright. And Alan had revived them in Tom Strong.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I said, you know, I thought there was a lot more potential in it. And Alan didn't really have the time or the inclination to do another series himself, so he suggested that we collaborate. So we used to plot things out together face to face, and then I'd go away and write the scripts. And as you can imagine, I learned a hell of a lot in the process.
Because I would just imagine even being able to sit down and talk with him must be some kind of an uplifting experience, because he reminds me a lot of Grant Morrison in the sense that there's a lot of depth to the thinking that goes on in there.
Yeah.
It must be fun just to pick his brain and say, well, what about this and what about that?
Oh, yeah, sure. When we were doing those series, we'd be together for like 4 or 5 hours. And we'd spend half of the time working on the story and the other half just talking about everything under the sun and having a really good time, you know, laughing ourselves silly. And, you know, no, it was great. And the other thing is that, you know, when Alan was working on things that he was really pleased with, he'd kind of like act it out for you. He'd do the scene. So I got to hear bits of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, like, or Promethea or whatever, like months before it actually came out as a comic.
That must have been fun.
It was fun, yeah.
Well, anyway, the last question is, I get an understanding that you have a nickname that people call you the Count.
Oh, that dates back to when I first started writing. I was nocturnal, like a lot of people. Neil Gaiman used to be as well. And it's just easier to write at night. It's quieter. I can't do it anymore now because I have young kids. But back in the day, yeah, I did used to sort of work right through the night. And so there were friends of mine who did nickname me the Count.
Because I have a friend of mine who draws comics. Yeah. And he always tells me he draws at night because he doesn't get bothered by phone calls or emails.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets a lot more done at night. And so I found that really entertaining that you got called that for a while.
Yeah, there's not many artists that work at night, but there are a few. Brian Bolland used to, and I heard recently Jack Kirby used to as well.
Wow, that's interesting. So you're in good company there.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Well, keep up the great work, because Resident Alien is one of those wonderful books out there. I think as many people know about it, I still think there are a lot more people that could be exposed to it and really enjoy it. So I'm on a countless mission to tell the people, please read this book, because it's such a good thing, and it'll expand your horizon and make you think differently. And I think that a good comic like Resident Alien, that's what it should be doing. So please keep up the great work.
Well, I'll keep writing them as long as people keep buying them. So.
Well, count me in there. I'll be in there for sure. So thanks so much.
Good man. Okay, and thank you.
I hope you're enjoying a wonderful holiday season, and that you'll be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.